Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
7:14 a half, rain is getting heavier, and you need to be careful when you're out there. It's going to rain until about 1 o'clock today, and then cool off for the weekend. More rain, however, on Sunday, and I like to think of it as a rainy Friday is better than a sunny Monday. Joe Geruso joins us now, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, Joe?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. One thing I appreciate about you, and I've said this often, is that you're not a table pounder, but you are a fact finder, and you are a very gifted attorney, and you will get to the bottom of what's going on, as will the city council. Tell me about the investigation that the city council is going to launch and Bourbon Street and the terror attack and all of that, Joe.
Well, look, there's kind of two things going on, I think, in parallel right now. First, New Orleans Police and Justice Foundation have hired the former chief of New York, Bratton, who came down here and gave a press conference yesterday. I assume what he's going to do is look at two major things. One, how are personnel deployed and where to put them. And he will say, you need more people, more places. No surprise there. And we'll also assess what equipment and other needs the city has and also say, you need to have more there. So, look, I have no problem with somebody from the outside taking a look in, hopefully in concert with NOPD, and looking at that. And then the second part of it is yesterday we started the investigation into what happened with the bollards. Obviously, the thing that we're the most interested in at this point is documentation for two reasons. First, we don't know. We don't know who had what and when they had it and what was exchanged and who was responsible for anything. And secondly, as I've learned from my time as an attorney, paper doesn't lie. It doesn't fade with time. There's no memory that is lost. It's there. And so I think the idea is obviously to get all of that, put it sort of within a chronological order so you understand how things were evolving, what was going on. And my guess is, without knowing anything, that there's going to be probably multiple points where things can be improved, and how do we get to the bottom of those and make sure that we understand what's going on.
We are going to talk to the CEO, Peter Whitford, of Meridian Rapid Defense Group, who, as I understand it, is in town to, is he going to be talking to the council? He's going to be talking to NOPD, Public Works, to talk about the Archer barriers that the city purchased?
Yeah, he's probably going to be talking to NOPD first. And look, that's one of the things I do want to be careful about is when you do have these security concerns, obviously you need to keep that group fairly tight. You can't have 100 people knowing or else there isn't really a good secure plan. But I think they'll be talking primarily to NOPD, probably also to New Orleans Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness as well, and making sure everybody's on the same page about how those assets should be deployed, where they should be deployed, and then obviously how you make it as safe as possible.
So when it comes to these Archer barriers, local TV station reporting that, Fox 8 it was, I'll say it, Fox 8 saying that the Meridian Rapid Defense Group, and we'll talk to that CEO later on this morning, that the city of New Orleans bought 45 of them in 2017 for almost $250,000. In a conversation with Colin Arnold that we had on, let me get my days straight here, on Wednesday, he was talking about, and I believe he was quoted as saying, that they weighed between 400 and 500 pounds, took 3 to 4 people or some type of hydraulic equipment to place in place. But then when you look at the video from the company and talking to Ramon Antonio Vargas yesterday in a story he did for, I think it was The Guardian or The Illuminator, I get them confused, we found out that they have these handles that, or lift devices, however you call them, that indicates one person could easily move this thing with leverage and so forth. And I guess the question I'm wondering is, who would be in charge of seeing where the 45 of these things are, of maintaining them, of knowing that they had these handles, of being able to deploy them, and at what point did the communication fail? And I guess it's all the stuff, Joe, you may not have answers now, but when Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick said she didn't know about the arch barriers, well, that's one thing, but not knowing about that they could be deployed by one person and having to use equipment, that's something else. Thoughts on all of that? That's a lot. Jump in where you feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, it is a lot, but it's the point I raised Wednesday when we were at the end of our hearing on the meeting with Chief Ann and with Rick Hathaway, who's head of DPW, and then when we formally launched the investigation yesterday, is I don't know who is responsible for what. And there seems to be a doubt about, is that question about bollards, archers, equipment, big, heavy trucks and units being deployed, is that within NOPD's bailiwick? Is that within Homeland Security's bailiwick? Is some of DPW there? And then, Tommy, sort of to further your point, okay, let's say somebody says these things are too heavy to deploy. Well, it just hypothetically says one of those three departments says that. Well, what happens if another department says, no, that's not true. It has a handle. We've been here for forever. How does that get resolved? I don't know the answer to those. That's what I keep on pressing on, is we sort of need two things. One, a very clear governance structure for how these agencies are operating, because they do touch different things and have different levels of jurisdiction. And then number two, within the French Quarter itself, you really have so many different stakeholders who are there too. And there is a group of people who are going to want more pedestrianization. There's businesses who sometimes don't want that quite as much because they want freer flow of traffic and to get things delivered. So it's going to create, I think, this investigation. What we're trying to do is hone in on your questions. And then also, what do we need to do to make sure things move more quickly? And then the last thing, Tommy, I'd say about this too, and this is a point I will continue to harp on for as long as possible, and I think Fox 8 has made this point, and I know the paper as well, is we're on our fifth different director of public works and our fourth different police chief. And it's really hard to have that institutional knowledge. The point you just raised is, had we had somebody here for 7, 8, 10 consecutive years, that person probably knows the archer conceptually can be moved by one person as opposed to three people. When you have somebody who's new, whether it's Rick Hathaway or Ann Kirkpatrick, it's really hard for them to acquire all the information that they need if they've only been on the job for about a year.
I think that happens to all of us on a smaller scale. Joe, I got the maids come in and clean my home every month, and so they don't realize what a pigsty I live in. I throw everything in a container and hide it, right? And then sometimes I realize that wait a minute, why did I buy another one of these? I had it, and I just forgot that it was somewhere, and I think on a larger scale that might have been what happened here. But we'll continue to talk about it when we come back. 722, Tommy Tucker, rainy Friday morning, traffic now, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council. Remember, talking about the security hearings, Bourbon Street, and so forth. Joe, how different is Mardi Gras likely to look? Do you have any idea?
I don't have an idea yet. Look, I think we've been through this before, both in shortening the routes a few years ago and with also more compact crowds along that route. That's my greatest concern, is just making sure we don't tighten it too much where you have overflow. I think they're going to see, or at least we're going to have a push to get as much barricades as possible too, to make sure we can kind of keep people back and away from floats. And somebody else asked me, well, what do you do about coolers and grills? And mm-hmm. I think we're going to both do a sweep and have a good education campaign to people. If it's your cooler, keep it close to you, making sure it's with your family or your friends that you're having fun with. And if you see something that wasn't there or just materialized, or you watch somebody drop it off, make sure you know people know. Obviously, we're going to have more federal resources, too, as a result of getting that bump up in the federal system to CR1 rating. So you'll have more feds involved. And I kind of think with the federal government being here, Tommy, you'll really see more things. And that's a bad way of putting it. You'll probably have more resources, but not see them. You'll probably have more people in the back who are helping NOPD watch things and have things in the background and providing tools to them, but and probably blending into the crowd too. But I doubt you're going to see federal marshals on the parade route with great significance.
Yeah, because I was talking to Arthur Hardy yesterday, and he brought up that exact thing. It's like, well, you got a guy walking around in a mask dragging an ice chest. That kind of is what Mardi Gras is, right? I mean, in a way.
It's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. And I think to the city's credit, they brought that up. People may not remember, but in our first term, we actually passed legislation moving, and I was not necessarily a big fan of this, of moving portalettes further away from the route. Mm-hmm. And my reasoning was, if somebody wants to do something, they're going to do it. And what are you going to do about a cooler or a porta potty or something else? But maybe with hindsight, the further that you can push some of those things back and have as much vigilance as possible. But I think Arthur's right. What are you going to do with somebody who decides, I don't care, I'm going to be a suicide bomber with a cooler and bring it on a route? There just isn't much that we can do. But at the same time, that's true in any place, no matter where you are with crowds. And I think all of it is just trying to remain as vigilant as we possibly can. And look, Tommy, the other thing I will say, too, is this is the whole point about why the terrorist attacks affect us so much psychologically, is because now it's a fear of, should I go and do my normal routine? Should I have the things that are happening? And I think part of the thing we all have to remain cognizant of, this is what it's like now living in a free democracy and in the Western world, and how we make sure that we're both safe, but at the same time, don't stop doing what our normal routines are, because if that's what happens, we're sunk.
Anytime, anywhere in this country, somebody can show up with a couple of guns and some big magazines and kill, unfortunately, more people than died on Bourbon Street at any moment. So you're right. It's just part of living in an open society. Thank you, Joe. We'll talk to you again soon. When we take a break, when we come back, we'll talk to Mark Rosa, President and CEO, Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Help you manage your money with Mark Rosa. Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. One thing I can tell you, the insulation in our building is good because it's been 58 degrees in the studio now for the entire week, even though outside it's warmer than that. So congratulations and kudos. Let's talk to Mark Rosa now. Oh, it's going to rain until about 1 o'clock today. Be aware of that. Then it's going to be cooler for the weekend. Mark, you've probably been enjoying this weather, huh?
The cool part of it, yeah. Rain, not so much.
Yeah, you should have come in the studio today. You loved it. 58 degrees.
It's the same in my building on Veterans. It's cooler inside than it is outside. Yeah,
well, we'll be talking to you on the phone then, because it's about 2 o'clock till my feet warm up. Let's talk about market valuation. Boy, an interesting story from Market Watch about the Fed, and that you sent me, that was very interesting. I'm going to read the headline, and then you can expand, okay?
Please.
Fed official delivers a blunt message to the stock market, which ignores it. Have at it.
You know, tell me, and I need to start before that for all our listeners. You know, we approach things, we approach purchases in life very, very casually at the grocery store, and you're just picking up things. It doesn't require a lot of thought. Mm-hmm. Big ticket items, you sit down with it, you go through what you think you can afford and what you like and how are those things going to match up. And it's anything from a gallon of milk to a new car, new house. We have an idea of what that means to us and how you would go about getting it financially. And whether anybody realizes it or not, that valuation bleeds over into the lending business. I mean, when you think about it, of course it does. So loan officers are kind of predisposed to have what's called a multiple in their mind. Okay, so it's one times your earnings. So when we're casually or just routinely getting applications for new car loans, somebody comes in, it's like, oh, yeah, I want to buy this new car. I've really been thinking about it. Boy, I love the way it looks, and it's got this and this and this. And I'm ready. I'm ready financially and so on. Okay, how much money do you make? I make $70,000 a year, and it's a $350,000 car. Something tells me an application's not going to move very far unless that person has some mitigating circumstance. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to put half of it down. Okay, well, now we're getting – okay. So you're changing up that valuation. You're changing the calculus of how that transaction may go, because otherwise some people have a different approach to say, I want to – finance a $350,000 car. I make $70,000 a year. I'm not putting anything down. I don't want to put, no, I'm not taking any money out of my savings if I have any savings. And I think once they do a simple math, it's just not going to work. He doesn't make enough money to afford the note on such a pricey item. So when you get into homes, it's the same story. It might be the multiple might be 4 or 5 times annual earnings. And it's, you know, somebody, again, walks in, makes $100,000. Well, we know that, you know, a $500,000 loan wouldn't be too terribly high. We can sit down and look at some of the details. But if they walk in and want to buy a $2 million home, I think very quickly they're going to realize that they don't make enough money for the purchase. So where the article I've shared with you is these valuations go into stocks and bonds, all investment purchases. And it continues with the same rhetoric in terms of it's a multiple. So all of it, and it's very subjective. Even the examples I shared with the loan officer, you know, to sit down with somebody and to work through their numbers, because everybody's different. Somebody could offer more to put down, or, well, I got other income. Well, let's see what it is. And those are mitigations. But it's when the Fed governor comes out and says the stock market is too high, you know, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it means that too much pricing has been built into the current averages. When we were approaching the election, the Dow was hitting, and the S&P were hitting record after record. And it's like, well, the economy is doing decently, but not that well. You know, the labor market numbers are out this morning. We'll pick up with that on Monday. But I think it's going to be a fairly weak report. We'll see when it comes out. But it's like the economy might not be as well positioned financially. We've got a lot of headwinds. We've got, you know, people have record credit card debt, record bank loans. The government's debt has never been higher and growing by, incidentally, another article said $10 billion a day. Mm-hmm. So that debt is piling on very quickly. So we've got some headwinds. We've got a new administration coming in. Okay, they have a lot of plans and things that they want to do. How is that going to affect the economy and work itself through the system? So when the Fed governor in question, she came out and said, you know, just be careful. Everything is priced, in her words, quote unquote, everything is priced for perfection, meaning that we can't hit any speed bumps. Mm-hmm. No downward surprises.
Best possible case is what you're talking about?
Say again?
Best possible case.
Right. It's no disappointments. So we're in earnings season, and the companies that are starting to report out of the S&P 500, they need to hit the marks that the analysts were expecting. Disappointing earnings would be like, you know, going into the loan officer again for the car. So, well, you know, last week I was making $70,000 a year, but I took a hit. Now I'm only making $42,000. Is that going to affect my judgment or my ability to buy the car that I want? Well, hell yeah, it's going to affect you. You don't make enough money. So for a lot of these, the Dow averages, remember, we hit an all-time, never seen before high of 45,000 not long after the election, and it's never seen that number again. It's retreated. It retreated a little bit more this morning. The Dow right now is at about 42.8. Why not 45 or 46? Well, because we don't have the ingredients that are going into the market to keep those levels. So what's worse is if somebody is saying, well, okay, I'm buying in now, I'm putting in my 401k, I'm going from the idea that with no disrespect to anybody, but mm-hmm. I think the majority of the people really don't know what they're investing in the 401k. They have mutual funds in there because I see it with my own employees. It's like, what exactly are you buying? You know, because proudly they say, oh, every time I get paid, I put $100 into my 401k. But it's like, what investments are you putting? And that's when it runs short. People say, well, I really don't know what investments I'm putting the money in. It's like, well, maybe you should know. I think that might be a good idea. So another example of too high valuations is Tesla. Do you know that Tesla right now is worth more than the next 10 largest car companies combined? It's like, well, how did that run up such a balance? Do we really think that Tesla is worth that much? And it has to be priced for perfection. If any of their earnings start to wane, where the new administration is saying, well, I'm not going to put a lot of incentives into EVs, and I'm backing off on a lot of these green kind of deals, is that going to hurt Tesla's valuation? So at $180 per share of stock, could we see a significant pullback in Tesla, might it be cut in half? And I would say yes. I mean, you could buy, now this is for you, you could do it, I can't do it. You could buy the whole Ford company, every share of stock would cost you $38 billion, a mere pittance for yourself. But if you went to Tesla, to buy Tesla as a company, it would be $1.2 trillion. So it's those type of valuations will scare somebody at the Fed. It should scare everybody, period. And it's we just have to watch going forward what we're investing in and to say, is if everything is priced for perfection, that's kind of perilous. That's teetering to say, I don't know if perfection is going to be delivered.
I think, Mark, you made an excellent point when it comes to your own finances as well, in that you can't, when you try to budget for something or plan for something, plan on everything going perfectly because it never does, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's kind of a fool's errand. We don't want to say, quote, nothing can happen in the future to me financially. That's just a bad statement for anybody to say. And, you know, people's savings rates tend to be low. And we saw that through the inflationary cycle of late, where people are like, well, I live from paycheck to paycheck when the market is doing wonderfully well. It's like, well, what happens if the market, meaning prices of eggs and butter, don't do well? Then you're selling out your 401k that I saw so many times this past year just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. Well, that bucket is going to dry up. There's not an unlimited amount of money in there. Then where will you be? It's just too short-term of thinking to approach these financial issues just too casually. And then that's where people get caught in a bind.
Very valuable information, Mark. I appreciate it. I really do. I think you just said a mouthful. Thank you, sir. Mark Rosa, President and CEO.
Thank you, sir.
You bet, a Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We'll talk to him Monday as we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street, Monday Morning Markets with Mark. You can never plan, and a lot of people do, and that's what Mark just said, and that's where they find themselves underwater on everything going perfectly, because nothing ever goes perfectly. I'm probably pessimistic when it comes to financial planning. I'm just the opposite. I plan on worst possible case and then back in from there. 7:55, 5 till 8, traffic now, WWL.